Hey, this is Jen Johans at FilmIntuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. This week, to celebrate the 55th birthday of Sesame Street, we have Noel McNeil with us. Noel McNeil launched his career performing on PBS's award-winning Sesame Street, where he honed his craft with puppetry legends Jim Henson and Frank Oz. He is a script and television directorial advisor and consultant for the international versions of Sesame Street and has directed episodes of Sesame Street, Bear in the Big Blue House, and has won an Emmy Award for his direction on Sesame Street. Noel is currently the resident puppeteer for the HBO series Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. His puppet-making book, 10-Minute Puppets with Noel McNeil, and the follow-up Box are both with Workman Publishing. He's also written his autobiography, Hey, This Was Really Fun, Life Lessons from Sesame Street to the Big Blue House and Beyond, available on Amazon. Noel lives in Brooklyn with his wife, novelist Susan Ely McNeil of the award-winning Maggie Hope historical mystery series and mother-daughter traitor spy from Penguin Random House. Well, Noel, I want to thank you so much for doing this. It's a pleasure to meet you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. It's like overall, I live in New York and Brooklyn with my wife, author Susan Ely McNeil, Maggie Hope Mysteries, and she's now working on her new novel. And my son, our son, is in a Boston conservatory right now as a sophomore. And I've been busy directing. I'm a director for Sesame Street. So
yes.
In September, directed three songs, holiday
nice.
Songs that are come out. Halloween already came out, the 12 Treats of Halloween. There's We Wish You a Merry Christmas, which will be coming out at the record the holidays are doing, you know, any day now, and a Valentine's Day one for February. And then when I'm not doing that, I'm actually a swing puppeteer and swing voice for the plant of Off-Broadway's Little Shop of Horrors.
I know. It's been amazing to see when Susan posts those updates. Yes, that's so cool, Noel.
Yeah, actually, I had to understudy rehearsal yesterday and then ended up having to perform that night puppeteering. So it was a very busy day.
Yeah, very exciting. Well, thank you so much for doing this. You guys are the second couple that I've had on, basically. The Cantwells are the other couple. Elizabeth Cantwell is a poet and a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I talked to her about horror movies and things that she loves. And then her husband, who was the co-creator of the show Halt and Catch Fire, he was on. So mm-hmm. I love having on creative couples. Susan is a brilliant writer. One of my mom's favorite writers ever, I'm sure she told you.
Yeah,
and,
mine too.
Yes, exactly. Susan's amazing. So, and I remembered that her husband, Noel, was a director of Sesame Street. It's Sesame Street's 55th birthday. So this is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Sure. My pleasure. Actually, the anniversary was just the other day. November 10th was the actual anniversary. November 10th, 1969 is when the first episode premiered. And I remember seeing this special hosted by these two puppets talking about this new show coming on called Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And the puppets were named Ernie and Bert. And you can see it on YouTube. They actually have like that footage of the special of them talking about it and promoting it. So it's great. And you get this, and they showed like, you know, some of the inserts. They showed Ernie and Bert. They showed Big Bird, which is totally different from the Big Bird we have all grown up with. He's very, very different. And personality wise, kind of like if Goofy grew feathers, it's kind of like that. And then Carol Spinney, who originated the character, at one point he said, in order to make him more relatable to the audience, why don't we make him the same age as our audience? So that's when Big Bird became six.
Oh, I love
that. And so experiencing the stuff that our viewers would be going through. And so, yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing. I was telling Noel off air that right now it seems like we could all use a little bit more magic and a little bit more of a celebration of human creativity and the cool things that are out there because AI is downsizing jobs and CGI, and we're losing this joy and this creativity of what people can do when they're working together because two heads are better than one, five heads. And you guys made some really amazing stuff. Noel, I would love to know your background, but I do need to give a shout out that one of my earliest movie memories, I'm always asked, like, what's the first movie you remember seeing? I don't remember, but one of the earliest, I would have been like four, I think, when Follow That Bird came out. And it was seeing Follow That Bird because I do remember it's slightly upsetting. There's like a scene where that Big Bird is painted blue and Big Bird's bummed out. They're
Right.
performing in a, and I remember as a kid going, oh my God, like how are we gonna get Big Bird out of this? So I do remember
Yes.
seeing that movie and being so happy by the end of it as a kid. And I know you worked on it. So this is a
Yeah,
nice
actually,
moment.
yeah,
Yes.
next year will be the 40th anniversary of the movie. So
Amazing.
40 years ago this past summer is when we were in Canada for about 4 months shooting it on location outside of, like, in the wilds of Ontario County, and then a studio where they recreated the street. What was interesting is that they actually, when they recreated the street, they put in like a curb. So it was kind of, it took a while to get used to like walking and
Yeah, it's a
then suddenly
different.
just stepping off, because our studio, the street's just like, it's a floor and it's just painted flat. Like, this is the sidewalk and this is the street side. So suddenly to have like a curb, it's like, whoa, it's like there's an actual step you got to be careful of. So and then we spent like about 4 months up there, and there's a scene where Big Bird, just a quick synopsis, these do-gooders called the Feathered Friends, want to place birds with nice bird families. And the chairbird, who actually I played, that's the first character you see, she's the one with the turban, talks about this case of this poor bird living on the street with no other birds around. So this social worker, Miss Finch, talks Big Bird into trying out living with the family, the dodos, in Ocean View, Illinois. And when he doesn't like it there, because they don't want Snuffy to come because Snuffy's not a bird, that's when Big Bird like decides to run away and walk back to Sesame Street. Well, he realizes it takes a little longer, and
Longer
so
than the 3 hours.
the 3 hour plane ride versus, like, 3 weeks it would take to walk back. So he on his walking back, he comes across this farm and he makes friends with these two kids, and they have a great little song together. And there was like one sequence we shot, and then when we came back after like rapping, I got off the, because at the time I was puppeteering, but I was also still the wrangler, the person who takes care of the puppets, and so taking care of like Big Bird and filling in, I was like his stand-in. And so when I got off the plane, I got this like message on my pager. Yes, that's how far back we're going, kids, my pager.
Yeah, I
And I
remember
called, and
pagers.
yeah, and so I called the Jim Henson Company, and they said that there was there was a scratch on the film of this one sequence. And so we would have to go back and shoot this one shot again. And so, okay, fine. So next day, got back on a plane, went back up, and went back to the farm the following day. But during that time, like, that's when like autumn came, and there was like a frost that came through. So suddenly, a couple of the trees that you saw in this shot were all orange and red, like overnight.
Continuity,
So they had to like rearrange the shot so that they had like on a C-stand, one of those stands that you use for putting lights on. And it's called C-stand because it's a Sentry stand. Sentry makes these things. And they put like these branches at the end of a stand, and like had the branches coming into the shot on an angle, so it looks like it's still
It's
nicely
still,
green and summery. And the kids who were dressed in summer clothes, as soon as they said cut, had to go and get back into the down jackets
Yeah.
because it was
Oh
cold.
my gosh. That's so funny. Yeah.
Actually, that whole sequence, Big Bird, when Miss Finch is coming, he hides in a haystack, and so that's actually me in the haystack
Oh, really? Okay.
wearing Bird's legs and like lifting it up. And I remember when they are trying it out, they wanted me to come in just to see how well it could move, and so the two guys like lifted it up and brought it in and put it down. And I was kind of suspicious because if it's taking two of you to lift this and bring it in, how am
Yeah,
I going to lift it? And so they
exactly.
raised it up. I got underneath. And of course, I couldn't raise it up by myself because it was too heavy. So they had to go
Yeah.
back and just make it lighter so that I could actually like work with this thing. So, but it was a great experience being up there, and the crew were wonderful. A lot of the background puppeteers that we used were the puppeteers from Fraggle Rock. And so
Oh,
they
cool.
got to work on it. Yes.
Yeah, I know. I loved it. Also, I saw it from a small city in Illinois. I saw it when I lived in Naperville for a few years as a kid. So I loved this idea that, oh my gosh, Big Bird is in Illinois. And so growing up, I wanted to know, because I know I watched some wonderful interviews that you gave on past podcasts on YouTube, and people listening, you should check that out. Noel has been so generous with his time and his stories, and so there's some wonderful resources. But I loved hearing your background, how you first got interested in puppetry, and your memories of seeing like Bert and Ernie when you were a little bit older, but they were fascinating to you. So I wondered if you could share some of that.
Yeah, I always say that when I was growing up, there were a lot more puppet shows on. So there was
Yeah.
Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop.
Oh
There
yeah.
was Bert Tilstrom and Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. There was, of course, Bill Baird, because there was that sequence from like The Sound of Music, and that's his
Oh
puppets.
yes, the lonely,
Yeah,
yes,
the
goatherd.
Lonely
Yeah.
Goatherd.
Yes.
There was, and of course, there was like Mister Rogers. There was Captain Kangaroo. Like all
Yeah.
these things are available on YouTube, by the way.
Yes.
The video junk drawer of the world. So just like check out. And like I said, I saw this show with these two puppets, one whose head was shaped like a football and the other one whose head was shaped like a banana. And they were talking about this new show. And I'd never seen puppets like this before because they either were marionettes or
Yeah.
like carved or like sock puppets, but these puppets were different. And then when I saw Big Bird, a puppet could actually walk around and talk,
Yeah.
just blew my little mind. I was like 7 years old, but I knew the alphabet. I knew how to count.
Oh yeah.
So so I just started watching Sesame Street just for the puppets. And then by the time high school came around and trying to figure out like colleges, that's when The Muppet Show was on here in New
Oh,
York,
love that
7:30
show.
on
Yes.
Monday nights. And so I began to think, you know, if this guy Jim Henson can make a living off of this and
Yeah.
these other people are, maybe I could. So I went and did research. And of course, there was no internet back then. So I had to go to the library, which is
My
like
favorite
Barnes
place.
Noble, but it's,
Yes.
yes, like Barnes and Noble, but it's free.
Yes.
And I went and did research, and I found at that time two colleges, one in Storrs, Connecticut, where you can still go for your 4 year degree, master's degree in puppetry. And the other
Wow.
one at that time was here in Brooklyn, and it was a Pratt Institute. And at that time they had a theater department, and within the theater department was a puppetry course. So I had both of these things laid out and planned, and I was going to present it to my mom. Now my mom was a single mom because her husband, my dad, walked out on us when I was 18 months old. So she ended up taking care of me and taking care of her mom and uncle who lived with us until they passed away.
Wow, what a
And
heroic
she,
woman. Yes.
yes, and we lived in Central Harlem. And so it was like either a choice of middle school, high school, either the school where the kid got stabbed or the kid got shot.
Oh.
So she worked two jobs to put me through private school downtown, the Rhodes Preparatory School.
Yeah.
So here I am presenting to the woman pulling down two jobs that I want to be a puppeteer. And I just braced myself. And she said, "Okay, what do we have to do?" "Oh,
That's a
okay,
great
well,
mom.
this school needs this, this school needs that." And said, "Oh, what do we have to do?" That's all she kept saying. She never dismissed it. She never belittled it. She never said I had a backup plan. And at the end of all this, it was just like, "And you're okay with this?" And she said, because she had been working for a banking company and she'd been a private secretary, she said, "Sweetheart, I've been typing the same letters for almost 20 years. Don't get a job. You can always get a job. Get a career." And so, and I was like, "Thank you." And she said, "And if tomorrow you decide you want to be a lumberjack, we'll figure out how to do that." So,
Oh, I love that so much. It's important to
yeah.
have somebody like that in your life, like a champion. I was a weird, precocious kid who I've told this story on the podcast before, but like when I was 11, I decided I was going to be a screenwriter and I wanted to join the writing staff of Seinfeld. And I just thought, I'm 11, doesn't matter. I'm going to do it tomorrow.
Right.
And so, like, I called the affiliate, pretended I wanted to write a fan letter, wrote, figured out how to write a script. And my parents had no idea really what was going on. But I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be a screenwriter. And my mom was always like, that's great. Like, do you need a book to learn about it? Like, she was never dismissive about that kind of thing. You want to write a book? Hey, you should write a book. Do you want a book about it? Or she was just always feeding that imagination. So it's good your mom knew it was a passion and that she wanted you to make a plan still, which is a very important thing. But I love that so much.
And then
So,
I ended up going to Pratt here in Brooklyn, and the teacher of the puppetry course was the builder of Big Bird and Snuffy for Sesame Street,
Oh,
named Kermit Love. And no, the frog was not named after him. It's just a freaky coincidence that just
wow.
happened. But I ended up going to Pratt, meeting him, and then during the summers, I would work at his workshop, feathering Big Bird for the show and for the live show. And then just before going back for my senior year in September of 1982, his assistant on Sesame Street, the Wrangler, quit. And so he offered me the job. And when I joined Pratt, I was told right off the bat that the theater department was being closed. So I was the last person being entered into the theater department. So as like, the year or two went by, people graduated, and then it would just be down to me. And so after a nanosecond, I said, "Yes, I'll be the new Wrangler, sure." So I never went back to Pratt. So that's why alumni has a very broad term. It's like,
Oh,
"You attended
exactly.
the school." "Yes." "Are you a graduate?" "I attended." "That's fine." So then I went to in September of 1982, I started work on Sesame Street as the Wrangler. And I've been associated with the show ever since, because we did the special Donate the Pictures, which was the characters getting locked in the Metropolitan Museum at night. And then after that, we did Follow That Bird. And I became, and then I transitioned from being a Wrangler to being like a full-time background puppeteer. And now I'm a director for the show.
You've worn many hats and kind of just as you learn on job in school, you go step by step. I did have a mentor growing up who said something interesting, like college is very important. The where you go to school is important for like the first job. And then after that, it's what you've done, what you know, your experience, and you just build from there. And you're kind of like you're also, I mean, I do remember I was a little too old for Eureka's Castle, but I do remember you were Magellan on there. And then in the 90s, you also did some writing. What was that like?
Well, it started with Eureka's Castle, because what I've learned ever since then is that when people write for puppet shows, odds are they've never written for a puppet
Oh no.
before. They'll just like write it. And so for the we would be involved in the production meetings at lunch, and we would re and read-throughs, and then we would try and throw in jokes, and often had to explain to them how this would work, even a visual
Oh,
joke,
yeah.
to the point where it got to the, like, for the first season, it got to the point where we decided as a group, as a, we wouldn't like do that anymore. We would just wait until we're on set with the puppets on and then just do it.
Oh, okay.
Right, because it's
Yeah.
amazing how people who are in charge of visual projects often have the least vision. And so our director, Hugh Martin, was like, he backed us up, and so he couldn't wait to see what we were going to do on camera. And so then for the second season, that's when I asked, like, could I be a writer? Because I was like, we keep changing this, so I thought I
Yeah.
would try my hand at it. So yeah, so I became a writer for Eureka's Castle. And then the same thing happened when I moved on to another show in the 90s. It was called The Puzzle Place. It was the PBS show.
Yeah.
And after the first season, it was like the same thing. It was just like, well, you know, I was like, I would really like to write for
Yeah.
this, because like being a puppeteer, I know how to write for
Yeah,
puppets. So yeah,
exactly.
so I'd be, yeah. And then when I got on Bear in the Big Blue House, I became a writer for that series as well.
Yeah, it's so important. You need that skill set because you have the experience and you know what you can do with a puppet and what can, you know, what techniques to use. And I think that's important you said about people in charge and the vision, because it reminds me of a friend who will go unnamed, who was a showrunner. First, he was writing for one series where they brought in a filmmaker who had made a movie and put him in charge of television. He had no experience with television, so he didn't really know how to break story or how that would develop. And
Right.
it just became such a mess because you know, it was not his background. And then
Right.
eventually the TV writers are kind of trying to go through that. So I think, you know, as the show progressed, that's what they did. And that sounds like, you know, what you did exactly. And I did hear that you worked with a very popular children's writer. Yes.
Yeah, with Eureka's Castle, the head writer was a guy who had never written for puppets. His name was, and this was his writing credit name, was Jovial Bob Stein. And he was a nice guy, but we always had to like add jokes and
Yeah.
stuff. And then once the, you know, series was done, he went on to become a legit writer for kids using his full name, R.L. Stein. So
Yeah.
yes, that R.L. Stein,
That R.L. Stein.
who I heard did very well with the
Yeah.
kids' books. And so yes, that was the head writer for Eureka's Castle, like a little bit of trivia people can't believe. And so actually there was like a new, when my son was in elementary school, they would have guest authors. And so I asked Bob, I said, would it be possible for you to
Yeah.
come? And like, and he said, absolutely. And so that was like the most popular like author that the school had ever had. And they bought like advanced copies of the books and like sold
Oh.
them out and all that. And he did a presentation, and it was great. And usually they give authors like, you know, a stipend as a thank you. And he just like gave it back to them and just like, he's like, I'm
That's
fine.
so nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you Google his net worth, it's
Yes.
redonkulous.
Exactly. And in the 90s, of course, this led to Bear in the Big Blue House. I love the story of this amazing weekend that you had getting Bear and another thing that happened, but I'll let you take
Yes.
that away. Yes.
Yeah, it was March of 1997, and I'd been called to come down to the Henson Company to audition for this big character for this show. And so I go, and they have the character set up, and it's this alien character for a game show, and he's the host. And so I get inside and just like, okay, this is interesting. It's kind of like the puppet Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors, which made me think, well, why don't you just get Marty Robinson, who's puppeteer on Sesame Street and who I know? It's like, this is up his alley. Just have Marty do it. So and then I left and forgot all about it. That was in the morning. Then around like later in the afternoon, like around 3:30-ish, I get a call and they asked me, no, could you come back? Because there's another character for another show we want you to try out for. And I was like, okay. And so they faxed me, yes, kids, faxed me the sides, the lines, and an illustration of what the characters look like. And it was this drawn illustration of these little critters, these cute little animals, and behind them was this big smiling face of the moon. And in between was this bear standing upright and smiling and waving. I was like, okay, this is cute. And I read the sides and like in the cab because the Henson Company was on the east side of New York and I lived on the east side. So it was like a 10-minute cab ride.
Oh, nice.
So I went down and I walked in. And as soon as I walked in, I was told, use your own voice. And I was like, what?
Oh,
But
were you like preparing something
oh
else?
yeah,
And
because I said, as I said, we're the Muppets, it's like, but they said, no, use your own voice because one, they had heard a plethora of like voices that day. It's like, oh, I'm a bear. It's like, oh, I'm a big old bear. It's that kind of thing. And second, they wanted this character to have just a fairly normal, like even comforting voice so that parents and kids could watch together and not sound goofy, like at that time, another very large character
Oh gosh,
kind
the
of.
Barney era when I babysat, so obnoxious, right? I'm glad kids loved it, but
So it was kind of like that. They wanted to be not that. So I was like, okay, so at that time I didn't have kids, so but I had friends who had kids. And so I would go into what was called my Uncle Noah mode, that sort of voice of like with the kids, like, hey, what do you want to do? I'm up for it. And just like that whole mindset. And so I got into the prototype, which is it was bare, but pretty much didn't have the fur. It was just like the understructure and like the foam head. And I just got inside and it immediately felt great. It felt so fun and it's like and so comfortable. And I could see through the mesh at the monitor because that's how we do TV
Oh,
puppetry. Like what you see
nice.
at home is what we see. So I could see the monitor. And then I thought, wait a minute, it's Friday. It's 4:45. Like you're not going to get this. They already picked out who they want. They're just hedging their bets. So I just said, eh, screw it. I'm just going to have fun. And that's what I did. I just like used the whole depth of the scene as he's talking to the camera. And then it got to this part where he stops because he realizes he smells something. And I just like had him twirl around and then he looks at the camera. And that's when I jammed his nose all the way in and pulled it out and says, it's you. And like did it again. Like, it's like, ooh, you smell like whatever was written. And then yeah. And then just had more fun. And then thanked everybody, got out, thanked everybody, left, and just never thought about it at all. And it wasn't until that following Monday, just before 6 o'clock, that's when I got a phone call from the Jim Henson Company saying, no, we would like you to be Bear. And I was like, what? Yeah. Now, the other thing that happened in between that Friday and that Monday, that Saturday, a friend of mine, Mike, had invited me to our mutual friend, Wes, who was in an a cappella group. And his group was in an a cappella competition. Say
Oh,
that
wow.
five times fast. And so he invited me. He's like, sure, I'll go see it. And so he also knew Susan because he and Susan knew each other from doing theater in college. Mike had gone to MIT and Susan had gone to Wellesley, but would do theater at MIT. And so the funny thing is, I moved in, it was this building on Manhattan's Upper East Side called the Monterey, 96th Street. And at that time, living that far uptown was just like, ooh, that's getting near like, East Harlem. And like, and so I remember they had billboards on the subways and buses advertising this place called the Monterey. And it was called the Monterey, California Living in the New York 90s, just to get people to come that far uptown. So anyway, I lived on the 26th floor at the end of the hall. And across the hall was this other apartment. Now, I met Mike in September of 1992. when he came over to borrow a corkscrew and invited me to come hang out with him and his roommate. So I said, okay, sure. But prior to that, like almost like a month and a half before, Susan was moving to New York. And until her apartment was ready, she was going to stay at this woman's residence hotel. Yes, Mary Barbizon. And Mike was driving down from Boston because he was going to move in. And so it was like a mutual ride. And Mike pulls up to the place, like looks at it. They don't even get out of the car. Just looks at it and says, you can't stay here.
No,
And
that's a good friend.
he just like drove off and said, you're staying with me and Wes, who she also knew. And so she crashed on their couch for like, almost 2 weeks. And the thing is, our doors like faced each other at the end of the hall, but I had known Mike yet. And so I had no idea that Susan was there. And we always keep thinking it was probably one of those moments of like, we just miss each other. Like one going in the elevator, the door closes, the other elevator opens up. It's like we never, ever ran into each other. And then Susan moved out and then moved to her apartment and had her life and then moved back to Boston. And I got to know Mike and all that. So then, fast forward to 97, and that's when Mike said to Susan, since you're back in town, Wes is in this competition, come see him. She's like, okay. So I meet Mike and some other people at this Thai restaurant, and there's this empty chair. And he says, oh, yeah, that's for Susan. She's coming. And I was like, oh, okay. I had no idea who Susan was. And I went to the bathroom. Then Susan comes, sits down, and she wonders about the empty chair. And she said, oh, yeah, that's for Noel. He's in the bathroom. And so I came back out, and that's when we saw each other. And it was like, wow.
That's
So I made a point of
great.
sitting next to her at the place. And then the next day, we went to a mutual friend's engagement party and we got to know each other. And then at the end of that, that's when saying goodnight to her, I asked her for her number, gave it to me. So then that Monday, I got bare. And then I also, called Susan to ask her out. The
Oh, I
rest
love
is
that.
history.
That's amazing. Like what, one of your best weekends ever, for sure. Got the coolest wife and one of the coolest jobs there. So Bear in the Big Blue House, I do love that you were talking about it being kind of a calmer show that parents and kids could watch, because one of the things that I found really delightful when I was reading about it is how children with special needs responded to it. And you started to hear from parents. So I wondered if you wanted to talk about that a little bit, because that's so important.
It was the kind of thing where it was after the show was off the air that I would get a fan email from parents thanking us, thanking me for the show, thanking us for the show, and how their kid was on the spectrum and autistic. And it just runs the gamut from being like high functioning to just being totally nonverbal. But this show was just the comfort for it because in doing research about this, like the characters were very simple if you really look at them. There's like because they're puppets, so and because of the budget, we didn't have like high tech hydraulics and all that. The only complicated mech really was Bear's eyebrows, where he would just like lower them and then pop them back open again. Everybody was simple. So this way, a person could actually look at this and their faces were simple because human faces are so complex in like the talking and the eyes and the eyebrows and all that. And so trying to keep up with that while listening to what they're saying
It's
and
too
how they're
much
saying it.
stimuli.
It's too much, and you can't pick up on like the social cues. But with a puppet, it's easy because they have that one steady face, and then you can just hear their voice and the way they act, and you can pretty much understand what's going on. And so I picked up on that, and then I've been trying to develop my own show for the same audience, and I've done a couple of videos on YouTube called, and it's called The Show Me Show, and it's
Oh,
for
I
kids with
love
autism on special needs.
that.
And so I've pitched it for years, and the same answer is that It's lovely, but it's too niche.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's just like, well, what show is a niche?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to, could we possibly make money off of this? And chances
Yeah.
are no, because niche means this is a very small audience. And so we really can't make a profit off of this small audience. So I remember I
Yeah.
did a pitch years ago for Nickelodeon, for a producer I knew there. And they were looking for a new show. And so I pitched it with puppets and a human host, all about making music and how music is constructed. And the whole presentation with illustrations my friend did and a map and like a little sample a song from the guy I wanted to be the host. And I could just tell this was not going anywhere. It was like, you get that feeling after the last watching the last 45 minutes of Titanic, like this is not a happy ending. It's like this is not going to go well. So I finally asked her, it's like, okay, this is obviously not for you. What do you really want? And she said, Noel, I'll be honest. If you can come up with an inexpensive 3D, even 2D animated show, where during the course of the adventure, the characters have to collect items that we can turn into merchandise the kids will want,
Oh my
that
God.
is what we want.
Yeah, like a big commercial, basically.
Yeah. I was like, and I was just like, okay, I'm done. So that's the kind of thing. So it is frustrating, and I've taken a break from the Show Me Show, but I'll get back to it at some point. So because I still believe in it.
I
So
do too.
fingers
And I
crossed.
think when you say niche, like it is for that market, but you never know what other people might respond to it. People like to watch Bob Ross because it's comforting. I remember once, like when I was sick in the middle of the night and I had insomnia, and I was going down the YouTube rabbit hole of things, and I remember finding like the Mr. Rogers where they made figure out how you make crayons in a factory, and I watched it was real that actually finally put me to sleep in the middle of a movie. And it's like, so you never know what is going to appeal to people, but it is frustrating. I have friends who pitch television, and one streamer who will go unnamed told them that basically all they want is a poster. And if it's a drama, I think they said they need 2 stars attached. And if it's comedy, 1 star attached. But they said, basically, just text us. We need the poster because we don't care if you actually watch it or not. We already have your money, but like we need to be able to sell it as a poster. And it's like, oh man. So yes, it's a
So
tough
intimate.
market. But
Dang. Yeah, it is. And it's like it can be infuriating, especially when you see like some of the stuff that is greenlit and on. It's like this got made. It's like really? This got made? Yeah. So yes.
But I am glad that you are, still looking for something and still trying to get that out there to serve that market. Because one thing I also loved reading about with Bear is how you would visit like children's hospitals and stuff for that. And I think that's great.
People always ask me what was the best part of being Bear, and I said going to the children's hospitals. This was before I became a parent, but I just had this feeling that having your kid in the hospital is like not easy, not only for the kid but especially for like the parent seeing your kid sick and being poked and prodded and tested. So having somebody come in that wasn't gonna like take their temperature or a sample of blood and just like it's a friend. And so when I could, whenever I did appearances to promote the show or be on other shows, I always asked, like, is there a hospital, kids hospital I could go to? And they've been great. There's like this the children's hospital in Seattle was beautiful. There's a hospital in Chicago which has its own TV studio so that kids who can't actually come out of their room, they can actually turn to the channel and see the
Oh,
show and who comes
nice.
in. Yeah, it's great. And then when I did an appearance in London, I went to the Great Ormond Street Hospital that J.M. Barrie, the author of Peter Pan, bequeathed the rights to. So whenever Peter Pan is used, it's like you have to pay the fee that goes towards the hospital. Right. It's yeah. And so and then when I was doing Bear for like the Walt Disney Christmas Parade, They found a place called Give Kids the World in Kissimmee, Florida, and it's this whole village that was started by this man who realized that for kids and their families, severely ill kids, sometimes trying to coordinate the airline ticket or finding a hotel that accommodate more than one
It's a
person,
lot of
and then a
work.
rental. But so then they work with Make-A-Wish, and it's all done. Like all the hotel, like all the major hotel chains in Orlando are part of this. The car rentals, Disney, Universal, SeaWorld, Busch Gardens, they're all in on this, and they will like just give free tickets to this. And then this is a resort, so the critically ill kids, severely ill kids, can stay there, and the rooms are big enough to accommodate any kind of
Oh,
medical
nice.
equipment
Assistive.
that they would need. And so there's a little theater there, and so I've done a little 20-minute show that I would do with Bear, and I've done it there. And the last time I was there, by sheer coincidence, there was a little girl there who, at that time, at the Hollywood Studios, which was called the Disney MGM Studios. And always will be in my heart. They had Bear in the Big Blue House live on stage,
Oh,
and so her wish was to meet Bear and go there. So it was coordinated that they would stay there, and then they would get driven over or drive over, and then see the show, and then meet Bear afterwards. It was just by sheer coincidence that morning I was there with Bear, and so did the
oh.
show for her and the others, and then got to meet her afterwards. And they told Bear what they were going to do, to go to see him later at the show. Now, the show is pre-recorded, so it's our voices, and the puppeteers, who are so talented, would lip sync. So they weren't allowed to like talk, especially Bear meeting people. And so Bear told her, "That's great. I can't wait to see you later. After doing the show, my voice is going to be a little tired, and I have to save it for the next show. So I probably won't say anything, but I'll be more than happy to give you a lot of hugs." Just covering the base of the fact that this bear is not going to talk
No.
like me.
That's really good.
So that was fun, and it's a great place. And if you live in the area, you have time to volunteer, by all means do so. Coming up is the season of giving, so by all means
Perfect
check out their
time.
website, givekidstheworld.org, and give as much or as little as you can. It's a great place. I love it.
Yeah, I am so glad you did that. I'm somebody who was as a kid, I had like five spine surgeries before I was like 23. And so I was one of those geeks who spent recovery time like watching old movies and stuff. But I can imagine if I'd been much younger, like what that would have been like. One of my colleagues who I worked with here at a nonprofit in Phoenix had worked for the Phoenix Children's Hospital. And she said that one of the coolest things that would happen sometimes is when Robin Williams would come to the Phoenix area with his wife, and when she was like with her parents, he would slide in unannounced at the children's hospital and just go and, entertain the kids for like hours. But he wouldn't tell people he was coming because he didn't want press and that kind of thing. And he would just do it and just stay there, and how it made him happy, made the kids happy. And that's really, it's so important. And so I love that you did that. I think that's something I also admire about Sesame Street, is it does really appeal to all kids, and it makes sure that kids with special needs are represented. Like even in Follow That Bird, you have somebody using sign language. It doesn't have to be explained to anyone, and so it's just wonderful.
Yeah, we're very inclusive on Sesame Street. I mean, that's why when Sesame Street even first came on, there was like a whole controversy with the fact that if for some of the middle America stations, like one in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi, didn't want to air it because it was too, quote, urban.
Oh, geez.
Yes, and
That
they got
word.
flack for it, and it was it aired, but then they took it off, and then it was backlash about it, and so they put it back on again. So it's always been about being diverse and being true to, like, there are
America,
all kinds
the
of, yeah,
world.
it's all kinds of people. I mean, the character of Oscar actually was supposed to like represent, somebody who's just, different from you. Like they have a different outlook of life. This is what they like. This is what they don't like. And just like, yeah, that's just it. He just represents that. So, yeah. And so, the fact that, we're just celebrating like 55 years, woo! And the new season will be coming up, will be premiering winter of 25 coming up. So, yeah, so it'll be good.
Yeah, I was wondering about that transition from being a puppeteer to directing. What is something like that would probably surprise people who are directors of live action with, adults and haven't worked with pup? What is like a huge difference? What is something that you think your skill set, you need someone with that background? What are some of the surprises you think?
Well, definitely it starts with like the writing, because of the fact that if you give a monologue to a puppet, if this monologue for a human being is boring, it is death for a puppet. Because just to stand there and just like blather, it's like there's got to be more to it than that. And so then that's where I've also taught puppetry. I've auditioned and trained puppeteers for the international versions of Sesame
Oh,
Street.
nice.
So sometimes I'll say to them, like, you'll get a script that's great. And it's just like so much fun. And then you'll get a script that's just not. Because that's when I was like wrangling and puppeteering on Sesame those years ago, I remember there was a couple of scripts that were just like,
Oh, for
yeah.
sure.
But that's when you have to find the humor. You have to make it fun. Because if it's fun for you, that fun will
Translate.
translate at home. If you don't like it, yeah, nobody else is gonna like it either. So that's one thing. And then also then you have like the frame, the TV screen. And so if you're standing there, like, first of all, well, do we find you standing there? It's like, are you coming in? How are you coming in? Are you coming in playful? Are you rushing in to tell us something? Are you strolling in? Do you suddenly find us and like come forward? And just like really play with that, if you lock off the camera, just like play with the frame. And because I was taught puppets don't act, they react, because they're
Oh, that's a
constantly
good
reacting
guess.
to what's happening around them. So there's that. And having worked and been directed by Sesame Street puppeteers, like two of the best were Lisa Simon, and who started out as the kid wrangler, and then she became a producer and a director, and then John Stone. And John Stone is really like the unsung hero of Sesame Street, because people always hear about Joan Ganz Cooney, who had this idea for the show, and Jim Henson, who came in with the puppets and all that. But the third person is John Stone, and
John
John
Stone.
really helped set like pretty much what we know as Sesame Street. Starting with the fact that very first season, if you go on YouTube, watch the first show, the street is straight. It's straight. It wasn't until John's suggestion for better camera angles and just to look more interesting that it's curved. So then you have a nice curved street now. And so, and
Oh,
John was,
good
and John
visual
was,
sense.
yes, and John was a writer. John wrote the best Sesame Christmas special ever, which was Christmas Eve on Sesame Street, which is kind of like the show. It's an hour and has like a main story, and then has like these little
Break
inserts,
off.
but the inserts are other stories. And it's great. Like we watch it still to this day, like every Christmas Eve. It's like it's part of our tradition. And so learning from them, like how things should look and how things
Nice.
could naturally fall into place. And also giving puppeteers the opportunity to play. Like within this scene or within this frame, like play, like what do you want to do? And so, yeah, so you learn, it's pretty much in life. Like you learn like how to be from great people, and then you also learn how not to be by not great people. And
Everything
so,
is learning.
yeah, exactly. I saw this great footage of Maya Angelou today, how she was saying that with every job that she's come to, anytime she speaks, anytime she directs, anytime she's like doing a presentation, she's not alone. She's bringing everybody who's helped her with her onto that stage, onto that platform. And because they've been like, rainbows for her. She shine, and she said, and it's this great quote, she's like, and like you need to prepare yourself to be the rainbow for someone else's
Oh,
cloud.
that's beautiful.
And I love that. So yes, it's like it's that kind of thing. Just like be the person. The other quote I like is be the person you always needed.
That is so important. I think that's great. And on the opposite spectrum from Sesame Street, you do something else. You're the resident puppeteer for Last Week Tonight. You were Mr. Nutterbutter, right?
Yes, I don't always teach the alphabet and that three is a magic number. Oh no, I get to work on like grown-up shows like Saturday Night Live. And like you said, I'm the resident puppeteer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. So occasionally I'm a foul-mouthed squirrel or a diseased lung or like most recently Steamboat Mickey.
That's right.
Yes. And first of all, and yes, if you're thinking like, what's John like? John Oliver is like one of the nicest guys,
That's what I've heard.
one of the funniest, smartest men I've ever known, and truly appreciates puppetry. Like he did a Vulture interview like 2 years ago, and he mentions like because he's been on with Sesame Street, and really appreciates and like the skill and the talent that we devote to this art form. Compares it to like playing a musical instrument. And so that's why it looks so good. And I was so proud. He even mentioned me by name and like the stuff that I bring. And for me, whenever we do a bit, we rehearse it and then we do the rehearsal with John. So my goal for the rehearsal with John is to make John laugh.
Oh, for sure.
Yes. And that's what happened with Mr. Nutterbutter when he first came out, because John really doesn't see this thing until the actual like dress rehearsal. And I came out as Nutterbutter and I was able to do this thing where the like a squirrel's head just like pivot like really quick back forth up down and just look at him. And John couldn't talk for like a minute. He was just laughing.
That's the goal.
Yeah, so I was like, I was really pleased. Like I made John Oliver like one of the funniest men like laugh. So yeah, so I get to go on and do like silly stuff like that.
And you also have written some books. I wanted to be sure to ask about that.
Yes, I wrote two how-to books. One was called 10-Minute Puppets, and it's how you can make a puppet in 10 minutes or less. And the other one was called Box, and it's what you could do with all the cardboard and paper
Yes,
that
because
comes
we
into
get
our
so much
house.
and it's such a waste.
Yeah, and they're available on Amazon. You check like used bookstores as well. They're out there. And the last book I wrote because there was this thing that happened a couple of years ago called the pandemic. And so while you're stuck inside, it's like, oh, you know what? I'm going to write down some of these stories I've always told, and then I put them together in the form of a book. And so my memoir is on Amazon, and it's called "Hey, This Was Really Fun," and it's my adventures through puppetry and beyond. So yeah, written
Were you
those.
inspired by anyone we know to write your books?
Well, it's like Susan's talent is like extraordinary because she can create like whole worlds and all these lives. And it's like, it's not easy playing God because you gotta like keep track and like juggling those balls of like who's doing what and
When
all
you
that, which
invent
is
a place or a person,
yes, exactly. With me, it was just easy. I'm just like regurgitating all this like nonsense that happened to me. But like, it's like some of it's so ridiculous you couldn't make it up. But yeah, so I just decided to write that, and also as a way of eventually having these down so that someday my son could actually like read some of these stories rather than have the old man just like blather on about them and like, did I ever tell you? Yeah, Dad, you did. But see, now it's in a book, so I don't have to go through that anymore. It's like, here, just read the book.
Or your
Yeah, that's why.
grandkids and
Yeah.
other generations or future puppeteers who want to learn
Yes.
more.
Right. Here's what not to do. Try
No,
to be
not
this
for
person.
me. So you're doing Little Shop of Horrors. Is there anything else you're working on that you can talk about?
Yes. I'm actually working on my debut cabaret show
Oh,
here in New York
wow.
City on March 24th of
Oh, very exciting.
2025. And it's pretty much based on my life, on that book that I just mentioned. So, which would be
Wow.
available in the lobby. And yeah, that's pretty much like how I became a puppeteer, a dad, a husband, philosophy of life that was started with the positivity of my mom and
Yeah.
these songs that reflect that in moments of my life. So, and I've got some very lovely, talented people helping me. Jen Barnhart, who is a puppeteer that I've worked with on Sesame, on Between the Lions. And Jen was one of the original cast members of a little Broadway, Tonya winning Broadway show called Avenue Q.
Oh, wow.
And
Okay. Yeah.
another great friend of mine, Fergie Philippe, who has been in Hamilton and in a lead role. He was in the revival of Camelot.
Okay.
He was just in the off-Broadway The Connectors and super, super talented guy who aspires to be a puppeteer too. And then there's like, this guy, Matt McNeil, who happens to be, my son. And so he'll be doing it as well. And there might be a surprise like guest or two, somebody else,
Yeah.
like, so can't say yet.
Is Matt an actor, or what is Matt interested in as far as performing?
Matt really wants to do musical theater. In fact, he's
Oh,
gonna
that's wonderful.
he's in the process of transferring from vocal performance, the sort of the operatic technique,
Yeah.
to musical theater. So
Wow, that's
yeah, so that's what
incredible.
he yeah, so that's what he wants to pursue. So
Yeah.
and musical theater is great. I mean, it's been extraordinary working on a Little Shop of Horrors off Broadway because that is my first legitimate theater. I've done things for like performing, writing shows and performing at the Bronx Zoo, or I wrote a
Yeah.
family musical that's performed every year in South Miami, and it's
Oh,
called
cool.
Mouse King, and
Oh,
it's the story of the Nutcracker, but from the mice point of view.
I
And so
love
they
that.
perform that every year. But this was my first legit like theater experience being off Broadway. And I always, whenever I watch the Tony Awards, they always say, community, being a part of this community, the community of this
Yeah.
community. It's like it almost becomes like a drinking game to the point where by the time they get to Best Musical, you would have alcohol poisoning every time they
Yeah,
say community.
community, take a
But
drink.
having worked with these
Yeah.
people, it really is true. They really are a community. It's extraordinary. In fact, this time of year right now, they do it twice a year. Broadway Cares, Equity Fights
Yes.
AIDS. And at the end of the show, the actors ask for any and all contributions and even sell off like autographed programs and posters. And that's what we're doing here. We're selling off autographed programs, posters, props that have been used on stage. And yeah, so it's truly extraordinary.
Yeah, you're giving back. You touched on something earlier that I forgot to ask about, and I wanted to know more about taking Sesame Street worldwide. Do you have any stories with that? Like, how was that
Oh yeah, it
experience?
was like actually I've been going to I well now with Zoom you don't have to, but I used to be able to go to certain countries and audition and train not only the puppeteers but also work with potential writers and directors.
Yeah.
And so I remember going to Jordan to work with their Sesame Street, and then also meeting with the writers and the directors for the Palestinian Sesame Street because
Oh,
they were revitalizing it
wow.
because it
Yeah.
used to be a joint effort and now they were going to have their own like Sesame Street for Palestine. And
Yeah.
so once again they had a couple of people who had never written for puppets before, so that's why I was there to show them examples of how to write for it. And then after a couple of days, then got to the point where it's like, okay, tomorrow, come in, pitch an idea to us, and if it's really good, it might be used for the show. And so the next day, through the interpreter, this young guy who had studied to be an architect, I think, but he was trying his hand at writing, he pitched this idea. Here we go. So there's the Palestinian Sesame Street side. There's a split screen. One
Yeah.
side is the Palestinian Sesame Street side. The phone rings. The Muppet on the Palestinian Sesame side picks up the phone. On the other side of the split screen is a character, a Muppet, in the Gaza Strip.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yes, wait. And so the Sesame side, it's kind of hard to hear their friend because of all the bombing that's going on in the back.
Oh my goodness.
So the Sesame side wants to help their friend feel better. And so writes a little note, ties it to a dove and a Muppet dove, and sends it
Oh.
up. A second later, you hear a gunshot.
No.
And on the Palestinian side, you see feathers falling onto the head of the Muppet
No.
on the Gaza side.
Oh no.
Yeah. And through the interpreter, I said, a world of no. I said, through the interpreter, I understand what you want to do, and I appreciate that you want this to be
Yeah.
done, but this is not the way to do it.
This is
And
not
so then
Sesame
I
Street. Yeah.
asked because the whole thing is like Sesame Street is a safe haven, like you can come there.
Yes,
And yes,
exactly.
occasionally the outside world does intrude, but there's a way that the
Yeah.
characters can
That's
handle
not
it
it.
that's comforting and reassuring. So then I said to the others, okay, how could we do this? How could we make this work
Yeah.
for Sesame Street? And we sat there, and what they came up with was that the human, there's a human character
Right.
in the Palestinian Sesame Street, and he's sad. And the two Muppets come and they see their friend that's sad, and they ask why. And the human says, I haven't heard from my friend. They're in Gaza, and I haven't heard from them, and I'm worried. And so he leaves. And so the two Muppets think, well, how can we make him feel better? That's like, I know, let's make him laugh. Laughter is like a way of making somebody feel better. And so that's when they come up with different ways. So they dress up like clowns and they try and think of ways to make them
Yeah.
laugh, including like trying to make balloon animals, but they blow and they fly everywhere. And so after these attempts, that's when the human starts to laugh.
Oh.
And they said, we made you feel better. And the human says, yes. And actually, you've given me an idea. So that's when you dissolve to this drawing of the three of them, the human and the two Muppets. And he rolls it up and he ties it to one of the balloons that they tried to blow up. And he lets it
Ah.
go. And it floats out over the wall of their like Sesame Palestinian
Yeah.
neighborhood towards like that direction. And the young writer who had his original pitch, he said to me through the translator, it's like, but you watered it down. And through the translator, I said, you're damn right I watered it down.
That's the
This
show. Yeah.
is Sesame Street.
Yeah.
And again, I appreciate what you're trying to say,
Yeah.
but this is how you have to say it for this show.
For little
He
kids, this
then,
is preschool. Yes.
he didn't
Yeah.
go on to work on the show
Okay.
eventually. Yes. And in fact, this story was like featured in like a couple of years ago in like the New York Times, and how you have to, because Sesame Street always
Yeah.
tries to adapt for that particular region,
For
and
sure.
like not only their like their street, but also like subject matter. Like for India, I was there at India, and they had this binder that was thicker than a phone book, and it was like what they wanted to cover for they like
Okay.
for their news. They were revitalizing their Sesame Street and taking out the inserts, the dubbed inserts of like the Count and Ernie and Bert, because the jokes weren't translating. So they wanted to have their own
Gotcha.
original
Yeah.
content. So they would have a street story, a Elmo word of the day, and then they would have a segment with Grover and his little monkey friend out in the real world. And this was what all these topics they wanted to cover. And I took the, and I worked with them for like a week. I was in India, and I said to them, okay, see this? And I just like let it drop on my hand with a thud on the floor. And I said, what you need to do is like, you need to pick, because they only had like, I think they were doing like 26 shows. You
Oh,
need to
wow.
pick, you need to pick three themes,
Yep.
just three.
Yeah.
And within those three themes, you need to pick the three most important things you want to teach. And
Yeah.
that's it.
Yeah.
And pretty much it was like, clean water,
Yes.
recycling, reusing, and hygiene. Like,
Very
that's
important.
it.
Yeah,
That's all you
exactly.
need. That's more than enough. And so, yeah, working with them with that. And they had a character, this wonderful Muppet called Anchu. It was kind of like a almost like a furry monster with like an anteater nose and dreadlocks, but she was wonderful. And they didn't know what to do with her. And they were thinking of cutting her. And I was like, no. She's a great character because she could do magic. And that's what they were concerned about. Like, can we actually promote magic on Sesame Street? I said, well, we've got Abby back home. You know, she's a fairy. And Mumford, the magician, way before that, he was doing magic. So I said, the rule is with magic is magic can never solve the problem. In fact,
Oh, I
often
like that.
it'll make the problem worse.
Worse,
So you have to use your brain and cooperation to solve the problem. And so we came up with the story where it's really hot and it's called Gully Gully Zimzim, by the way. And if you go to YouTube, they have the best opening. Oh my God, the opening is fantastic. And it's really hot, and the two Muppet characters are complaining that it's hot. And Anchu comes in, and she knows a spell to bring cold to the gully. And so she does this spell, and then poof, a penguin appears. An animal that you would never see in India, and certainly far from like, you know, a place that's so hot. And so they tell her, like, you got to send him back. And then she's about to, but the thing is, when Anchu sneezes, she just disappears. And that's what happens. She gets so flustered, she sneezes, and she's gone. And you don't know when she's going to come back. So now they have to take care of this penguin and figure out how to make him feel comfortable. Like, for instance, like, you know, penguins like ice. Well, how do you make ice? You make ice from water. Oh, so let's get some clean
Clean
water
water.
to
Tying it
try and do
together.
the right, as well as teaching like empathy. This poor character is here. How can we help this character feel better? So things like that. So yeah.
I love that. That's so cool. And I think, boy, I want to see that puppet though, in that
Oh
beginning, because
yeah, it's
it's
Google. It's
so,
all on Google.
yes.
It's on YouTube. Go to YouTube. It's just like Gully Gully. It's actually spelled Gally, Gully Gully Zim Zim. And it's
And
with a actually with a D. And
this is
it's
all,
great.
yeah,
It's
this is all.
all on YouTube. It's like yeah, the Palestinian, the Indian, the Jordanian, the Japanese Sesame, the Irish version of Sesame, which takes place in a tree, is called Sesame Tree,
Oh,
where
wow.
there's this character who lives in the tree because he's agoraphobic. So he sends Muppet characters out to explore the world with him. And in the last episode, he finally overcomes his fear and goes outside. And like the British version, which is called the Furchester, because they believe in farce. So imagine Sesame Street meets Fawlty Towers, and you combine it, and that's the Furchester.
Oh,
So yeah,
that's
so
so
they
great.
adapt to that particular country's, you know, norms and culture.
And is this also where we can see some excerpts of Show Me Show, like what you've been working on?
Yes, on YouTube is my channel, The Show Me Show. So I have like little videos that I've put on. I'll probably be doing some more, hopefully the next year, maybe. Yeah, fingers crossed. It just takes time, and there's only so much you can do by yourself.
I
So
know. I know. Well, anyone listening, let's get this thing happening, because I
anyone with
want to
deep
see
pockets,
this.
you want to help
Yeah,
families,
exactly.
contact
Let's
me.
just green light it. I
Come
mean, we
on,
can
let's just
do
do
that.
this. Come on.
Yes.
Because
No,
that's
I'm
the other thing. If you
excited.
do well on YouTube, that's when the streamers go, oh, they're doing really well numbers on there.
Yeah.
Maybe we should do it. So it's like kind of like work backwards to do it. So it's like, okay.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah.
No, that's exciting. And the cabaret show sounds amazing. So
Yes,
congratulations on all of that.
I'm looking forward to it. It's like we did our first, like, because it's been me mostly, but then my son came into town to visit, and then Jen was in town for even time. So it was like, okay, let's all get together and do a like a rehearsal. So we met for 2 hours with my music director, John Bronston, and director Michael Kirk Lane, who's like the cabaret guru. And we just like went through the show, and just like, it's great. So it's like, this will work.
Oh,
It's
that's
coming together.
amazing.
Oh my God.
Well, I hope somebody records it, or else I might actually have to get to New York City one of these days. I've never
Yeah,
been. I've been through
sometimes
New
50,
York, but never to New York City. It's
sometimes
embarrassing.
54 Below streams their show. So if it's
Okay.
streamed, if the, then you can buy, it's almost like buying a ticket to see the stream. So
Hey,
if
that's
that
fun.
happens, I'll let you guys know, and then you
Sounds
can like
good.
see it there as well. So yes.
Yeah. Well, Noel, I want to thank you so much for doing this. Are there any last words of wisdom or any stories that we didn't get to that you want to be sure to tell any?
Well, I was like going back to like my mom like believing in me, and it's
Yes.
just like one thing I just want to impart is just like, you know, so many times we will put our faith and trust in somebody else. We will
Yeah.
believe, you know, our parents, our siblings, our friends, our clergy, our politicians, you know, we'll
Yeah.
believe in whatever gods we believe in, you know, we'll
Yeah.
believe in like, we'll believe in everybody else except us. And
That's
so you got to believe in
true.
your, you got to believe in yourself first. Because if you don't believe in yourself, then who's going to try and believe in you? So,
Yeah.
yeah.
No, that's so
So,
important. Yeah.
yeah. You got to live with you for the rest of your life. So, you know what? You can do this. Just believe in yourself. And it's not always going to be easy, but that's
No.
life. But you can get through it.
Yes, you can. Well, my goodness, you've lived an amazing life, and I want to thank you so much for sharing all of these stories and your time with us. This was
Thank you.
wonderful. I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more, by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching.
This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.